Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name is Adam Brimelow, and I'll be leading us through what winter has in store for the NHS alongside our annual NHS Winter Watch campaign. In this episode, we speak to the NHS's Chief Operating Officer, Amanda Pritchard, on the challenges the health services faced, next steps for vaccinations, and what trusts can expect from NHS England and NHS Improvement in the coming months. Chris Hobson, NHS Providers Chief Executive, is also with us. We hope you find this is a helpful discussion. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you. Winter, we talked about a perfect storm of COVID-19 really potentially running rampant alongside severe winter pressures, plus the constraints imposed by infection control, staff shortages, compounded by high absence rates, and on top of all that, a vaccination program unprecedented in speed, scale, and complexity. And that perfect storm is something that actually happened. Amanda, from where you sit now, how would you say that the NHS has fared with these challenges?
Yeah, thanks, Adam. So I think the first and most obvious kind of reflection from my perspective has been it has been extraordinarily tough. So the story really of the whole year, I think, has been one of NHS adaptation, flexibility, innovation, collaboration. I mean, it's been an extraordinary response right from way back a year ago when we first heard of COVID. But this last few months have really taken a toll. And I think I saw a statistic the other day, actually, that said, I think last year we had in total 250,000 inpatients with COVID positive inpatients. And in January alone, we had 100,000. So it really does, I think, put into perspective just quite how challenging these last few weeks and months have been. So from my point of view, I think it's worth saying, once again, a testament to the kind of just extraordinary determination and resilience of people across the whole of the NHS. And that is not just frontline staff in acute trusts, that's equally true for primary care, community, ambulance, trusts. And it's also really true of our leaders. So I've been really struck by actually how much our leaders have carried their organisations, their colleagues and their teams through the last few months. So extraordinary experience over the last few months and an amazing, amazing result with the vaccination programme so far. So to have vaccinated 15 million and counting people just within England, so for the NHS to have done that on top of maintaining urgent emergency care services and providing care to all of those COVID positive people who've needed it, I think has been a quite extraordinary achievement, but not without consequences.
I think for me, Adam, I think what Amanda really brings out well there is that sense of how much we had on our agenda in terms of not just the ordinary winter pressures, but actually the fact that we had to deal with this skyrocketing number of COVID-19 patients, but also do the vaccination campaign at the same time. So it was really a sense of, I mean, we all know how difficult the last few winters have been and how really, really pressured they were. So in a sense, I'm kind of on top of that after a really, really busy year. That's why we were using that phrase, perfect storm.
Are there any sort of legacies, lasting legacies we can look forward to out of what has been such a terrible event, this pandemic, in terms of something the NHS has learned or is doing differently that you would point to as being something that we really should hang on to and develop and pursue in the months and years to come?
Yeah, so It's a slightly strange thing to talk about in a way, because I'm really conscious that right now, today, we still have more COVID positive patients in hospitals than we had at the peak of the first wave. You know, we're still over 100% of our core critical care capacity within the NHS. So it really does not feel like we are through this. So it's a slightly odd thing to be almost doing that retrospective, you know, lessons learned and look back. But saying that, actually, I think you're spot on. That there are things that the NHS has done over the course of the past year that we really, really don't want to lose. We want to build on. So for me, some really obvious things around innovation. So a shift, whole scale shift to treating patients virtually, not just primary care, but secondary care, mental health as well. I've seen real partnership at local level that's been particularly clear in the way that mutual aid was provided in those early days, but through now to really thinking about how to support care homes, about enhanced discharge, you know, all of those local arrangements from far up north to right down in Cornwall, we've seen similar examples. And I think that's the sense I get now, and talking to people across the country, is there's a reality of today that's still really tough. There's a reality of what people have been through, which in many cases is personal as well as professional. They've lost people they care about, and we just shouldn't and won't ever want to dismiss the importance of that. But there is also this sense of actually quite appropriate pride in what the NHS has done, and a sense of people, I think, very much now want to build on that, and they do want to go forward. There's an absolute recognition that I think that is what we are collectively up for as we begin to see, hopefully, the way out.
Yeah, and I think as you look forward, I think there's a couple of interesting things, aren't there? One thing that is clearly on the horizon is the move towards more system working. And obviously that's kind of front and centre with NHS bills kind of coming up. And we're incredibly struck by how whenever we talk to anybody about exactly these issues, everybody says about how much collaboration has been going on, and that real sense of system working, primary care, secondary care, social care, local authorities coming together, that's really mushroomed. The other bit that I just think is slightly intriguing for me is that sense of the NHS almost surprising itself by how quick and flexible and transformative it could be. And I recognise that in terms of sort of day-to-day operations, but I think the NHS is doing some extraordinary things. Things like doubling and tripling critical care capacity, almost not quite at the drop of a hat, but, you know, things like that. I think it's given people a sense of the possibility of what could happen when we put our minds to it and when we empower local people. And everybody talks about the NHS being a large super tanker that's very difficult to turn around. And I think my observation would be that if we can just get people to remember how quickly they change things and how effectively they change things to look after patients, I feel that's something that's a bit intangible, but I think that feel for me, that's something that we just need everybody to hang on to.
I was really hoping to come back at Chris on his last comment about some of the sort of super tanker stuff, because I think you're spot on, Chris. And I think there's something for me about, I remember being on the phone Christmas Eve thinking, oh my goodness, yeah, we are fast coming up to some of those milestones we never ever thought we would ever hit on critical care capacity. You know, what's going to happen next? And then having a similar conversation the next day, the next day, the next day, the next day, as the NHS did manage sort of unbelievably to continue to find a way. And I think that is an extraordinary, it really was, you know, it was not comfortable. And I don't think we should for a moment forget what that's meant to individuals who found themselves working in those circumstances. But nonetheless, the NHS did find a way. And also just a real, real shout out to people like the volunteers who just have come together to kind of make things like the vaccination program possible in a way that, again, I think does show what not just the NHS, but actually public service can do when the ask is made. So yeah, I agree with you. It's given me a sense actually of real confidence actually in local leadership and in people getting together to do the best they can, the right thing in really difficult circumstances.
The NHS has really demonstrated it can respond to these enormous challenges, and clearly huge challenges remain, notwithstanding the fact we seem to be coming down off that second peak now. Amanda, what are the biggest challenges, the biggest worries that you think the NHS faces that are front and centre of your mind?
So absolute obvious number one for me, it is supporting our people. Because although we've talked about what has been a very intense last 2-3 months, that is on the back of this very relentless year that people have been through. So looking after our people, I just think is an absolute number one. Second one for me, and it's just back to the point about we're not through this yet. So actually we still have an ongoing challenge around managing the pandemic. And critical also, of course, to that is we still have this huge vaccination program. Not yet, you know, we've done amazingly well, but we're not yet, you know, close to halfway through. So this is a major endeavor that kind of remains a big priority, obviously, for all of us going forward. But as we sort of think, and I guess this is sort of where you're pushing a bit, Adam, to the sort of consequences of the last year. As the kind of tide of COVID recedes, I suppose, what's left on the shore? And I think we're going to have some very obvious things and some less obvious things. So the obvious things are going to be we have far, far more people now waiting far too long, particularly for elective care, than we've had for some considerable period of time. And I know that people are really worried about that. And I don't mean patients. I mean, people, colleagues across the NHS are really concerned about that. But we've also got, I think, some unknown demand. So we don't know what the mental health long-term impact is going to be from what's happened this year. But we saw an uptick in demand after the first wave. I can't believe it won't happen again. And I think, again, some of the international evidence is clear. It's sort of almost 18 months, isn't it, after a major trauma that you begin to see a real wave of demand for mental health start to hit. So I think we should anticipate that. But again, we're waiting to see that crystallise. And demand for long COVID, again, we don't fully understand that, but we know that's going to be a reality that we will be living with. And therefore, that's going to be part of kind of what's left on the shore once the COVID tide recedes. And I think the other bit for me is sort of not losing sight, I guess, of some of the ambitions that we had going into COVID that remain just as significant now as they were there. So, for example, it is about a real commitment that we have made collectively to improve cancer outcomes through particularly earlier diagnosis. Well, that's still are a huge priority, and just because we've had a pandemic for the last 2 years doesn't make that any less true. So some of the things that were set out in the long-term plan as our ambitions for transforming care, for transforming outcomes, I think, you know, remain absolutely still as relevant today as they ever were. Final point for me though, Adam, and I think this is probably almost the most important, is just I really think that new focus will have to be on health inequalities in a way. Although we've talked about it before, and I know it's absolutely there if you look at the long-term plan, and it's there in many of our kind of national programs, and it's absolutely there if you look at you know, local plans, ICS plans. It's a new number one, I think, when we think about our legacy of COVID and what therefore the health service needs to orientate around as we think about recovery.
So Chris, I know that you had also some thoughts about the way the NHS adapts to COVID in the longer term.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to pick up particularly a conversation that Amanda and I have been having over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think as intention has shifted, but let's not shift it too quickly. And I think Amanda was spot on about that earlier on. But a real sense of we mustn't portray the next phase as somehow an awkward and difficult juxtaposition between looking after our staff and actually recovering care. And I thought Amanda absolutely, for me, started in the right place, which effectively was we do need to look after our staff. And talking to one of Amanda's colleagues the other day, Prana, the reality is that beds don't look after patients. Actually, it's staff that look after patients and service users. So I think this kind of concept of as we look forward to the next stage, what we absolutely have to do is give our staff the ability to recover. And then ensure that we have an appropriate strategy that balances the number of different things that Amanda was talking about. And I suppose my observation would be is there's an awful lot to do. There's a lot to do in terms of recovering those kind of care backlogs. There are going to be new demands that she highlighted in terms of mental health and long COVID, but also I think some really important priorities that were really brought out, I think, in the long-term plan. But I think, again, I thought Amanda expressed it really well, just that real centrality now of health inequalities, given the impact that COVID has had on those inequalities. And also, Adam, as you were kind of asking, I think we've got some really interesting challenges about how do we deal with COVID-19 long term. I wrote a piece for the BMJ a couple of weeks ago where I listed four or five areas where we're going to need to think really carefully. The obvious one that I put up front was if we are going to have to go for an annual vaccination cycle at the moment. I mean, we've done some extraordinary things to vaccinate those 15 million plus. But let's be honest, the workforce model we've adopted isn't particularly sustainable. We've effectively asked people to give up existing work, be they community nurses, be they GPs. And actually, we are going to have to work out, if we are in this annual round of doing these vaccinations, we're going to need to work out what's the sustainable model. So there's a lot to do, but the starting point, exactly as Amanda says, has got to be giving our staff the space that they need to recover from a really unprecedented, and I know that's a very overused word, but an unprecedented period where it's very clear that lots of them are going to need, all of them are going to need to express to space to decompress and recover.
I suppose this raises the question, Amanda, in terms of the way you set out, you map out the way forward. There's a real onus on you in terms of making sure that expectations are realistic and clear. How will you do that?
So on that, I think it is something we've been really conscious of all year, the importance of kind of getting the balance right. And I think broadly, actually, we probably have. And that's been partly because I think we've stayed very close to colleagues across the NHS, and we've tried to do everything in a very kind of consultative, joined up way. So just as an example, when we put out the letter back in the summer that talked about elective recovery expectations for autumn, we tested it really pretty thoroughly with colleagues before it came out. And although it landed, I think, as a genuinely pretty stretching set of ambitions, actually the NHS on aggregate did achieve them. So it's given me confidence that sort of check and test and work it through and listen to what we're being told by people who are actually doing the job, as well as, of course, from our regional colleagues who are, you know, have been critical to our whole response and remain absolutely kind of linchpins of the NHS going forward, it is the right sort of approach. I heard a really good phrase the other day, actually, from a colleague who said, it's about stretch, not stupid. And I thought that was a really nice way of putting it. And that is the balance we're trying to strike. And obviously, on behalf of the NHS, that's the balance we're trying to strike in our discussions, regular, daily, weekly discussions with colleagues across government.
Yeah, and Adam, if you don't mind, if I'm allowed to do a mini public herogram to Amanda, one of the things that I think she and her regional colleagues have done really well over the last year has basically been to have a greater degree of consultation, co-design and involvement with frontline leaders. We certainly feel, from our perspective of representing those leaders, that actually there's a quality of dialogue now, that the creation of that regional structure, but also Amanda's involvement at NHS England and Improvement, but also things like the very clever models we think they've used to bring in some provider chief executives to help out on issues like PPE, to help out on issues like the vaccination campaign, to help with test and trace, have made a real difference. And there is a real sense that actually, and I thought it was really interesting relatively early on in this podcast, the way Amanda was trumpeting the role of local leaders, it does feel different in terms of a degree of recognition about empowering and enabling and supporting and facilitating local leaders. And I think that's really, really important. And I'd just like to say that I think it feels different as a result of what's been going on over the last year, year and a half.
So Amanda, just thinking in terms of the audience we have for this podcast, obviously NHS leaders up and down the country, but also frontline workers, what key message would you want to get across to them at what I think is a really key moment, isn't it, in the course of the pandemic, where there are really strong grounds for optimism over the future trajectory of the pandemic, but there are these huge challenges ahead which you've been describing. What's your key message to them?
I really recognise that you can sound hollow when you say thank you all the time but actually it would be inconceivable that if I actually spoke to people across the NHS, that would not be the thing that I would want to say first. Because I think there has been the most extraordinary level of commitment, and people have just consistently gone further, done more to look after patients, because that's what it's been all about. It's doing the kind of near impossible to try and look after patients as well as is, you know, has been possible over this incredibly difficult year. So that would have to be my kind of, if I could only say one thing, that would be it. But if I was allowed another, I would say, but it is so, so important that people look after themselves and look after each other. And actually that is true of everyone. That is from our leaders through absolutely everybody who works in every role, because everyone's done their part. So that is, I am struck by, you know, how hard our primary care receptionists have worked, how hard our porters have worked, how hard our finance colleagues have worked, how hard our speech and language therapists in the community have worked, how hard our mental health nurses have worked. I could list every professional group, because everyone has played their part. And sometimes that's been by doing something completely different for the last year, because actually what they've been doing is supporting a vaccination effort over the last few weeks, not necessarily doing their core jobs. But it is a look after yourselves, please, because we have got a big task ahead. So actually the way that we will collectively do our best as we go through into next year is to just make sure that, as we have done over the past year, but even more importantly now, given the last few months, we look after ourselves, we look after each other, so we can look after our patients, and we can absolutely approach next year with the same energy, creativity, determination as has been writ large through the last 12 months.
I think it's really interesting you mentioned that great breadth of roles there, because I think in many people's mind's eye, there's been an image of the story of the pandemic playing out in hospital setting. But the reality has been so much more than that, hasn't it, in terms of the contributions in mental health and community services, ambulance services and so on?
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And I have some amazing colleagues across the NHS who are brilliant at kind of just bringing that to life with their personal stories of people who were looking after patients at home, who've seen in some cases a number of people on caseloads very sadly pass away, and what that's meant to them. So they've talked about how much it's impacted on people working in, you know, every care setting. But other stories that, again, people have brilliantly brought to life about it, and it is, you know, it's people who were HR professionals who've become PPE delivery people in the first, you know, few weeks, who then started to get stuck into helping set up surgical hubs during the autumn, who then turned their attention to marshalling really creatively voluntary sector support to help set up vaccination hubs over the last few weeks. So, you know, it's that extraordinary flexibility that I think people have shown no matter what roles they've done. And I remember saying 18 months ago when I came to this job, I remember saying at the time, when someone sort of asked me why I worked in the NHS and all this, that I sort of couldn't imagine why you wouldn't want to work for the NHS. And actually, despite what has been just, I think for all of us, an unbelievably relentless period, that has never been more true for me than it is now. Because we have all had the great luxury in some ways of being, whilst part of that unbelievably difficult experience, part of something very special.
Yeah, and I think for me, my favourite anecdote was the one where I was speaking to a Trust Chief Executive right at that. Do you remember that really difficult period, Amanda, where we were running out of gowns, and effectively, you know, the finance department of one very large trust basically spent the entire weekend scouring every single possible place where they could get anything that resembled a gown that was needed, and builders merchants, veterinary practices, etc. And just, you know, the real sense of the degree to which people were prepared to give up their weekends and just literally rally to the cause exactly kind of when needed. And you know, and again, without sounding too out over the top, I do think it's an appropriate point, because I don't think there will be very many places where this will be said, but I do think we need to acknowledge the role that you and our colleagues at NHS England and Improvement, indeed all the arm's length bodies, have played. Public Health England, MHRA, you've done an amazing job. You are sometimes, I think, the whipping boys and girls, you know, at Skipton House, etc., etc. But actually, one of the things that I've really enjoyed is the degree to which we've all come together as a single NHS, that's a wider health and care system, actually, working together really effectively to combat something that has just been extraordinary, really, really difficult to do. And I think there are some really amazing things that we've done, and national colleagues like you have really played an absolutely fundamental role in making that happen too. So I hope others have said a thanks to you and your team at Skipton House, but I think it's important it should be said in a public environment.
Well, a massive collective effort by a single NHS. Amanda Pritchard, Chris Hobson, thank you for contributing to the podcast.
Thank you.